Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
All right, Albert, who's going to be the coach of the Browns? Come on, give us the answer, will you?
Well, didn't I tell you 3 months ago that it was going to be Matt Campbell?
Is it going to be Matt? You did tell us 3 months ago, so you're the first one on it if it ends up. Do you still think he's the favorite?
I still think he's in the mix, guys. I think the intention was to have a wide-open search, and I think that's what they're doing. You know, I think they're taking the tire, and you guys can see the wide range of candidates they're looking at. I would tell you this, that like, when it comes to college candidates, I think those always sort of fly under the radar, you know, and the reason why is because they have to. The Greg Schiano hire in Tampa came out of nowhere. It was, like, reported, I think, for the first time, like, I don't even know if it was reported. I think it may have just been announced by a team out of nowhere. The Pete Carroll thing in Seattle was similar, where the reporting was the same day, and no one knew that he had even interviewed. And so these things always have to be done very, very quietly. And, you know, it's obviously sensitive because of recruiting. It's sensitive for a million different reasons. And so I just tell you, with the college candidates, if something's happening, you probably won't know about it. It's very difficult for even people like me to find out about it. And so I would think that there are, you know, a couple of college coaches in the mix on top of, some of the guys that we're already, you know, looking at. And you guys have seen some of the names. I mean, they've got a couple first year coordinators and the Colts coordinators, Matt Eberflus and Nick Sirianni, all the way up to, you know, a guy, Mike McCarthy, who's, you know, been a head coach in the NFL for 13 years. So it's pretty clear that, they're casting a pretty wide net.
You know, I mentioned this earlier, Albert, with Matt Campbell, too. Like, he is very low-key. Nothing gets out about him. Like, doesn't he – I'm told he doesn't really even have an agent, right, to negotiate.
Yeah.
He just, like, has like, an attorney look over his contracts.
Right. And I think he's, like – honestly, I think that if he were – I'm just telling you. Like, I'm not saying it's going to be him. I just tell you that I think if it is – what did wind up being him, I think it was – would be one of those things that seemed to come together really quickly, but have been worked through back channels for a little while. I just think he'd rather operate on, and I don't know him. I don't know him at all. I've just heard what I've heard about him. And my sense is that he would probably do a lot of that stuff through back channels and try to create this little disruption to the situation he's in right now as possibly could.
You know, Albert, a lot of the fans want the Browns to keep the status quo, and I understand that because the Browns played so much better in the second half. And you've said time and time again that you think it's very unlikely that Greg Williams would be the head coach. And the way John Dorsey has spoken this week makes you think that he's unlikely. And I was just talking about it today, and I'm like, John Dorsey has had a plan for a while. He's had a list for a while. He's talked about how important this hire is. And obviously, Greg Williams was not in those plans. I can't imagine he is going to throw away this long-term plan he's had for 8 football games. I can't imagine. Doesn't make sense.
Yeah. And I think the main thing is, guys, it's like when you're making one of these hires, this way, I think most teams look at it this way. Smart teams do, at least. It's like it's not a one-year hire, you know?
That's right.
you're not making the high. It's not a 2019 hire. There are cases where it's a little different. You know, like I think Denver hiring Gary Kubiak, right? Like, they knew they didn't have much time left with Peyton Manning, and they wanted to do everything they could to get whatever they could out of what was left of him. So going and rolling the dice in a first year, you know, a first time head coach probably wouldn't have worked in that circumstance. So there are circumstances where, you know, maybe you would look at the short term, but I think the great majority of these, 95% of them, you know, you're looking at it and you're saying, this is a guy we could envision, you know, being in charge for the next 5 to 10 years. And I think that that's why I think if you look at through that prism, you look at Greg Williams a little differently. Not that he's not a good candidate, not that he can't do it, because I think he's certainly capable. But, you know, if you're looking at what's best for the 2019 Browns, I think he would be high on the list. If you're looking at what's best for the 2019 to 2023 Browns, we might be talking about something different.
Albert Breer is with us. Albert, the thing that scares me is the idea of letting Freddie Kitchens walk out that door because of his relationship with Baker Mayfield. Like, what's the likelihood that he could still be here? And why not look at Freddie as head coach?
I think he should, and I think they will. I think they will give him an interview and give him a chance to lay out his plan. And beyond just that, I mean, I think, you know, do everything you can while still being fair to Freddie. And, you know, like, being fair to Freddie means, like, like mitigate his risk to some degree. Let him go and talk to other teams if he needs to talk to other teams. Try to be fair to him. But I think if you do everything you can to try to, you know, see if it would make sense for everybody for him to be back next year under a new head coach if he isn't the head coach. And there'll be some, you know, coaches where it will make sense, and there'll be some coaches where it won't make sense. And so if your pick's Mike McCarthy, you know, Mike McCarthy probably, and I don't think Mike McCarthy is going to be the guy, but if he were the guy, then, you know, I think Mike McCarthy probably have a pretty developed plan for who he would want in almost every role in the organization. Whereas if it's a guy like Matt Campbell coming from college, if it's a young coordinator, like a Matt Eberflus from Indianapolis, you know, then you're probably talking about a guy who might be a little bit more amenable to inheriting a guy who's going to give the quarterback the best chance to succeed. And so I certainly think that the Browns should do all they can to keep every option open with Freddie Kitchens while trying at the same time to be fair to him too.
Albert Breer, MMQB. Albert, we've been saying that the Browns' job is the best job of these eight available, which is weird because in the past it's always been the worst or amongst the worst jobs. I'm probably less biased than most people in Cleveland, but I still worry that I'm being a little biased with that. Certainly Green Bay with Aaron Rodgers, and to me that's the only other argument. I don't know. Are we biased, or do you believe the Browns' job is the best job of the eight?
No, I mean, I've said it a few times. I think it's number one. Now, there are, I mean, different coaches are looking for different things. So, you know, it's not perfect for everybody. And I think, you know, if you're Josh McDaniels or you're Adam Gase, say, right, you might look at Green Bay a little differently than somebody, you know, who has a defensive background or who hasn't been a head coach before might. You know, Adam Gase has worked with Peyton Manning. Josh McDaniels has worked with Tom Brady, and that gives those guys credibility going in and working with Aaron Rodgers. But that, I think, will be a difficult job for a lot of other people, you know. And so I think if you're looking at it on balance, you want to say, what's the best job for the average candidate? I think it is the Browns job, because you've got a young quarterback who, at least on paper, could be there for 15 years, and you've got a ton of under-26 talent on the roster, from Landry to Joku to, you know, Nick Chubb to the guys in the offensive line to Ogunjobi to Joe Schobert, Gerard Avery, you know, obviously Myles Garrett and Denzel Ward. There's a lot of good young players in that roster and good young players who are still on rookie contract. And so I just look at it, and I think objectively, it because of the youth of the roster, because of the talent there, and because of the flexibility you have financially, it's not even that hard for me to say it's the number one of the eight available jobs.
Albert Breer, MMQB. Albert, a couple other jobs. You mentioned the Packers. Some guys would like that. I know Pat Fitzgerald's been mentioned, but he said he doesn't want to go. Or at least, you know, who knows. But who do you think ends up most likely to end up there? And my prediction for the Bengals is not Hugh Jackson, but Vance Joseph. What do you say about those two things?
So you said Packers first, right?
Yeah.
Okay, I think Josh McDaniels and Adam Gase both have a really good job, a really good shot at the Packers job. If Pat Fitzgerald is out, like we all think he probably will be out. The reason why, Packers need somebody who can coach Aaron Rodgers, and that sounds easy. It's not. It's, you know, very much, it's challenging to coach a guy who has that level of experience, that level of ability, because it's hard to give that guy new information. It's hard to find ways to challenge that guy on a day-to-day basis. There's anxiety and pressure to it, and anybody who's coached like an elite of the elite quarterback would tell you that. And with Gase and McDaniels, the Packers aren't projecting. Those guys have experience having done it with me and Tom Brady. And so I think those two guys are very much in the mix there. And then, you know, I would say on the Bengals, I'm with you, Bull. I think Vance Joseph makes the most sense. That's a mom-and-pop operation in a good way and a bad way. In a bad way because the resources aren't great, because the scouting staff's short, because you don't have some things most teams have, like the indoor facility or lack thereof, is one example of it. The flip side of it is it's a mom-and-pop operation in that you're going to know everybody in the building, and you're going to have, you know, owners that are patient and are going to let you build your program and are going to support you. And so And I think because it's a little unique to the other 31 teams, that's why they want somebody with some familiarity that they have familiarity with and that has familiarity with them. That's why you heard Hughes' name in the mix. That's why they're looking at assistants like Darren Simmons and Bill Lazor. It's why I think they would jump at the chance to get somebody like Jake Rudin or Mike Zimmer if they somehow were available. And it's why I think ultimately Vance Joseph is probably the guy who gets that job.
Albert, it's rare for the Steelers to have this sort of dysfunction. It's been a model program for years. Do you think Antonio Brown has played his last game in Pittsburgh?
Oh, I don't think it's rare, Dustin. I think this is par for the course there.
Okay.
And this is, I think it's like, honestly, like I think it's like always been the way it is there. It's just they've always had coaches who've done a good job of controlling the noise, and that's sort of been their model. You know, forever they've had, I mean, whether it was, Antonio Brown, or whether it was Bill Cowher or Chuck Noll or, you know, now Mike Tomlin, they've always had these commander types that have allowed them to cast a very wide net in talent acquisition. It's allowed them to take chances on guys that other teams can't take. You know, they're able to take a chance on a Martavius Bryant because, you know, they've got, a structure in place that's taken on guys that have issues in the past. And this is the cost of doing business that way. You know, like they've had big personalities there for a long time. You guys remember? I mean, Le'Veon Bell's issues go way back.
Yep.
You guys remember the whole thing with him and LeGarrette Blount all those
right.
years ago.
Yep.
Antonio Brown's problems have been there for a while. It's just they've always had that, like where they've and this goes back to the 70s. You know, like where they've had colorful personalities, big personalities, some troubled guys, and they've always been able to sort of manage it because they've had the coaches to do that. And I think part of the cost of doing business that way is that you hit these bumps. And so it'll be interesting to see how they go forward with Antonio Brown, because to me, like abandoning your team on the week of what is in essence a playoff game, I don't know, Dustin, you played in the league. To me, that's pretty far over the line.
I totally agree.
Disgraceful.
I'd be so angry if I was one of his teammates. I don't even know how you'd.
I don't know how you.
I don't know how you bounce back from that.
I don't know how you put that guy back in the locker room, right? Like, isn't that kind of hard?
I agree.
They've always been able to manage these things. So,
Albert, let's talk Buckeyes for a minute here, because you know I know you're passionate about the Buckeyes, and what I don't get is, and I know you were talking. I think you were tweeting about this a little bit. You know, the whole deserved versus. Correct me if I'm wrong. I think I saw you say Ohio State didn't deserve to get to the Final Four, but you do think they're one of the four best teams. Am I accurately portraying that?
Yeah, no, I think that, yes. I think they hit a slump in the middle of the year that really cost them, and that slump was extended, and that's on them. You know, if your slump's for a game or two, that's one thing. If your slump is for 5 or 6 weeks and it includes getting blown out against an inferior team, then that's on you, you know? The same way, like with Georgia, you know, getting blown out against LSU, like, I know a lot of people conveniently forget that, but that did happen, you know? And so, like, when I turn on the TV and I look at Georgia against Alabama, or I look at Ohio State against Michigan or Northwestern or Washington, I say like that, like, I don't know how you could look at those teams and not think, like, those are the teams that could best challenge Alabama and Clemson, right? But that, I mean, at some point it's got to be about, you know, it's not a beauty contest, right?
Right, right.
Like, I think there's a sort of, you guys want me to play old man here? It's like sort of the YouTube generation. You know, they're more worried about stats and highlights and all
right.
that different stuff. I mean, really, at some point, it has to be about the scoreboard, doesn't it?
Yes.
And,
yes.
You know, unfortunately for my guys, unfortunately for Georgia, like the way the scoreboard played out this year, it's hard to argue. Notre Dame beat every team they played, and Oklahoma lost a close game in a neutral site and avenged that. You know, so it's like, It's hard for me to look at it and say, because if you were a fan of one of those teams and you got left out, I think you'd have a legitimate beat. It's just the way I look at it.
Yeah.
The four best teams, I think from a talent perspective, the four best teams like every year now are probably Georgia, Alabama, Ohio State, and Clemson. But at some point, it's got to be about wins and losses, and it's got to be about the scoreboard.
You know, I saw an interesting take the other day on Twitter from Herb Street. I think he was taking it from somebody else, but they suggested, what if we just got rid of the conference championship games, played the Bulls as normal, like we just did, and then picked the four best teams. Like, and just play the semis next weekend, or whatever. You move everything up a little bit, and that way, because teams are different now, with the time off, and like we were about to throw Georgia in this thing because they had a good half against Bama, right? And then he come out last night, lay an egg against Texas.
But in fairness, if you did that, Notre Dame would probably not have played Clemson in the bowl game.
No, they would have probably played a good team, though, and then they'd have 13 wins.
They might have,
Which is, you know, better than their 12, obviously, that they got them in.
Right.
Right. Yeah.
You have to factor in the opponent.
Look, it's an outside the box way of thinking.
I just think it's a good idea.
The hard thing about it, guys, is like, again, I've heard the whole argument for taking away the conference championship games. It makes some sense to me. I think the problem with taking away the conference championship games is the conferences are way too big now. You know, and it's like, if you've got a, I think that the SEC's 14 teams, the Big Ten's 14 teams, right? Like, how do you crown a conference champion? How do you do automatic bids in a fair way where, like, you know, the schedules are going to be completely, like, unequal. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, I think it'd be hard to, I don't know, my feeling on it is just, it'd be really, really hard because the conferences have grown too big to, like, to crown conference champions and then determine who's playing in what bowl game and be fair about it, you know? So I'm not wild about the conference championship games. I do think, like, the playing field should be level and everybody should have to go through that, like, or no one should go through it. But it would be pretty difficult, I think, to pick teams if we didn't have that, just because, you know, there's just that, I don't know, there's just that, like, I mean, Northwestern shouldn't get an automatic bid if they upset Ohio State, but, like, Ohio State, like, you know, again, like, doesn't play a lot of the teams in the West, and so there should be some representation of that as part of winning your conference.
Albert, Happy New Year, buddy. We'll talk to you next week. Thanks for joining us.
All right, thanks, guys.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today. Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.